Good afternoon and welcome once again to The Middle Way, politics, policy, and government the way it ought to be. We are intelligent, science-based, pragmatic, practical, and radically centrist. I am Matthew Burgles along with my co-host, Jerry Fabianic, who helps sponsor our show. Check out his many interests and pursuits at his website, jerryfabianic.com. That's F-A-B-Y-A-N-I-C. And we have been talking about his great book the last few weeks called Sisyphus Wins. And I've finished the book a few weeks ago. Loved it very much, Jerry. I also have a book out there. It's a couple of years old now, but it is about the environment and about our vanishing prairie and the ecosystem and wildlife in the prairie. And it's called Larry Saves the Prairie. That is available at mattburgles.com. That's B-E-R-G-L-E-S. Also on amazon.com. So, Jerry, we are back once again. And, of course, our theme song here is Roll with the Changes by the old 70s band REO Speedwagon. And the key lyric there that we faded out on, or in on, I guess, is if you're tired of the same old story, roll with the changes. And that's kind of the impetus for our radio show here. We are a centrist talk show. We are tired of at least the politics around both left and right. We fit in different places probably on the political spectrum, but we try to make this program as radically centrist as we can. We have had guests on here, including the chair of the Colorado Republicans. Today we speak with Mike Serbo, who is the chair of the Denver Democrats. We have had people here from D.C. Who are centrist think tank representatives. So this is our sixth episode, and I think things are rolling really well, Jerry.
I think so, too. And I'm just enjoying the exchange, because it reminds me years way back in the Land Before Time. And now all of a sudden, I'm spacing out the gentleman's he used to write for the New York Times back in the early 70s. And there was a strike. And he was supportive of the workers. But he says, I don't know. I can't. What do I know if I'm thinking if I'm not writing? And it's interesting, you know, you have these thoughts, you know, back of your head, which you might think, but until you verbalize them, either, you know, orally or put them on print, you know, in as I do weekly in my columns, the inner thoughts here, they don't really form up until you start to really express them in some way. So, yeah, it's just been a great opportunity for us to bounce back and forth. And, you know, you certainly are forcing me to hone my thinking on issues, and that's great.
Again, we are The Middle Way, and we are at K-Goat Radio in beautiful Idaho Springs, Colorado, 102.7 and 103.9 FM, and we stream live and are archived. So if you haven't heard any of our shows up to this point, you can go back and listen to them at clearcreekradio.com. Go to the archive button. So we're going to have, as I mentioned, Mike Serbo. He is the executive director of the Denver Democrats. He is the chair of the Colorado Democrats. We did invite the chair of the Colorado Democrats, but for a variety of reasons haven't been able to hook up. So Mike has generously decided to step in. He's not going to be talking only about Denver politics and Denver Democrats, by the way. He is a former state representative representing District 2 in Denver, and so we've asked him to step out of his role chiefly as the chair of the Denver Dems and talk more from a statewide, and we'll even have some national conversation too. We have a few minutes until he comes on, so Jerry, let's turn to the news of the week. There, of course, were lots of students marching against guns and for gun control, and I guess really we can say against the NRA a week ago today. I know you were at the local one and in Denver. I'd like to hear your take on that. Trump has fired more people since we last talked. General McMaster, of course, was replaced as the National Security Advisor by what most people consider to be one of the biggest hawks in America, John Bolton. David Shulkin, who was the head of the Veterans Administration, he has been fired by tweet, of course. And John Dowd has, quote, resigned as the president's personal lawyer. Whether or not he was fired, of course, is another speculative idea. The EPA administrator, Scott Pruitt, is under fire for a variety of issues, not the least of which that apparently he was living for nearly free in a condo in Washington, D.C., given to him, or at least allegedly given to him, by one of the biggest lobbyists in the energy industry. My biggest problem with Scott Pruitt is that as the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, he has not done a lot to protect the environment. In fact, it seems to be just the opposite. And then finally, of course, 2 weeks from today, both the Colorado Democrats are holding their state assembly in Broomfield, and the Colorado Republicans are holding their state assembly in Boulder, Colorado, which we were talking about earlier. Seems a strange place to have a Democratic convention.
A Republican
assembly.
Right, right. Yeah. No, it's, you know, hang on, baby, because just when you think you understand what's going on or you have a grasp on it, it's it changes that quickly, you know, as the wind blows through. But and I'd throw one other in there if we have a few moments about the Facebook page and, you know, the Cambridge Analytics and getting the profiles of 136,000 Coloradans. But we can come back to that. But yes, I was at the rally. I just wanted to observe to see what's going on. I'm a retired teacher and, you know, I'm going like, okay, I'm going to be there for the kids. And it was just absolutely powerful. It was an amazing experience, of course. You know, down at the Civic Center Park, to hear the students up there speaking so eloquently, the young people, about their, you know, their perspectives. And one of the concerns I have, you know, we talk about the younger generation, and I'm not sure what we call today's your kids, because the millennials were the ones born who turned age at the turn of the century. So what is this generation called, the 21st century kids?
I think they're called the cell phone.
Addictees. Yeah, it could be. But, you know, that whole digital thing and disconnected and everything, and yet they were there. They're out on the streets walking and talking, and I'm not just in Denver, 800 cities around the world, to watch the very articulate ones that get up on stage, you know, in Denver, in Washington, D.C. They're on the news. They're, you know, engaged in this exchange with some of their antagonists and conducting themselves extremely well. Mm-hmm. And I just feel so hopeful for the future now with these kids. They've just become energized.
And we talked in previous episodes here about how this is related in a way, or maybe analogous in a way, back to the Vietnam generation, when that really is what ended the war finally, as people out in the streets. And from that point up until this, really, there has been very few issues that have gotten young people so excited to get out into the streets and march and protest. And so from that perspective, at least, I think that it's awesome. And you're right. Some of them have, all of them really that I've seen have handled themselves so well. I certainly couldn't have done what they do at that age. And, it's interesting to read some of the conservative blogs attacking them for what they're doing, which to me, even though you might disagree with what they're saying, it seems to me that most thinking adults would say, hey, these kids are handling themselves well. After all, they're not throwing Molotov cocktails. They haven't turned violent. They're getting up there and exercising their First Amendment rights. But that's not what the majority of these blogs have said. And of course, Laura Ingraham, who has been a pretty self-controlled, I think, conservative talk show host. She got a little ahead of herself this week, and now some of her advertisers are fleeing because of some comments she made about these kids.
Yeah, well, and that was just plain mean-spirited, that when you say she got ahead of herself, you're being very kind. It was just flat-out rude, disgusting, and low, you know, what she, you know, made a dig at this young man who has a 4.2. I wonder what her grade point average when she graduated was. Okay. And to just even make a snide comment in some way, and then to couch her apology in terms of, well, it's Holy Week and, you know, all this other stuff. And it's just rather come right out and say, you know what? I blew it. It was really stupid of me, you know, that way. But, you know, she even had to qualify her apology. And after a third of her advertisers had stepped away from her, that's showing the power of these kids here, too, because the rest of us get it. you know, here. And you point that out very well, Matt, about how well they're handling themselves professionally. They're conducting themselves, they're articulate, and they're not backing down. I'm excited for them.
All right, let's move on. I would like to get to the Facebook issue if we have time, but let's talk a little bit about, once again, a chaotic week, chaotic 2 weeks since we've last been on the air in the Trump presidency. Chaos seems to surround this president. A lot of his allies and certainly some of his enemies have talked about he's a guy that thrives on chaos, always has. I've been around people like that, especially in public education. The more chaos, the more they seem to like it. I don't know if that's him or not, but it certainly seems that way. However, with all of the chaos that's going on, his approval ratings have inched up slightly into the low 40s. What's going on with this? And I'm going to ask Mike Serbo about this as well here in a few minutes.
Well, there's a normalcy that's going to be, let's say he runs for re-election in 2020, which is more than likely going to happen, assuming he finishes out his presidency, which is more than likely. He's going to get 40-some%. Some of those voters, they're going to come back home again. What we noticed, and I guess he went off the rails again this past few days, was that he really didn't go with the mad tweeter for a stretch. And so when that starts to calm things down, so those people are going to come back. But you know what? They're going to come back anyway. He's going to have, there's going to be that hardcore 35%. They're going to be with him. It doesn't matter what he does. He can shoot the person on Fifth Avenue, and they're going to be behind him.
Well, he's back tweeting this morning, this time about Amazon.com. Yeah. And, of course, he has mentioned Mueller by name. Two people that he's strangely silent on, and he did go silent, as they say, for 3 or 4 days, after the Stormy Daniels interview. And, of course, even though, I guess to the administration's credit, they have taken some diplomatic steps by expelling some Russian diplomats from the United States. But even with that said, he is strangely silent still on his old friend Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. So why is it that these two have not been in his bullseye? The special counsel has, Robert Mueller, Jeff Bezos, who owns the Washington Post. So naturally, he's going to get in his, radar as well. It just goes off the handle like that. But, so to take a look at the ones he doesn't go after should speak well, or speak directly really to him and what is. But, folks, get used to it. Assuming he finishes out his presidency, chaos is going to be the order. Okay, there's chaos theory in which order comes out of chaos, the universe, for example, because of the natural laws of gravity, et cetera. Not with Trump. Chaos, bedlam is his life. He thrives on, as you say, and it's always going to be that way. Hang on, and if you're tired, guess what? You're going to get tired of him because it ain't going to change.
I have certainly learned over the past year and, 3 or 4 months now since he's been the president, not to write him off. There have been several times that I won't go into when I said, certainly this guy can't survive this. I mean, Nixon, had to resign for less than this. I've had that thought many times, but I don't think that way anymore because he has proven, Ronald Reagan was the Teflon president. This guy is super Teflon. Well, we're going to take a station break here. We are the Middle Way, Centrist Talk Radio with Matthew Burgles and Jerry Fabianic at KGOAT 102.7 and 103.9. We're streaming at clearcreekradio.com. We will be back in a few minutes, hopefully with Denver Dem Chair Mike Serbo. So hang on, we're going to play some music for you right now, and we will be right back.
St. Stephen with the rose, in and out of the garden he goes. Country garden in the wind and the rain. Wherever he goes, the people all complain.
Hello, Mike. Are you with us? Mike.
Yes. Hey, Mike.
Jerry?
Yes, sir. Hey, welcome, Mike. Yep, Matt's here. This is Jerry Fabianic. Hey, welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, it's Marty. How are you? You may not thank me, and if you're one of the few people who will thank you, say thank you for me. calling in and talking to them.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, all right. Thanks, Marty. Really appreciate that.
It's your Friday newscaster and sponsor.
You got it. Yep. And, you know, and...
I have a question. I'm talking to Highway Billy, okay, and he's running unaffiliated. What are your thoughts on it? I mean, I think we can talk about it more at a later time. Trying to put together an organization similar to what we have now with the two-party system, but to kind of galvanize a cohesive strength to unaffiliated voters, where we too will have, you know, I don't know whether you want to call it a caucus or just something like that, so we can become more of a realistic entity in the political process.
Right. Yeah. Hey, yeah, Marty, that's a great question. And how does that come in, you know, with our commissioner race and everything, too? Which gives me a lot of, you know, how do we talk about that? Could we get you to call back a little bit later? Because we're expecting the call here from the chair.
I'm bailing on Idaho Springs and going back to Silver Plume.
Oh, okay.
But I would not mind talking about that. I'll talk to Billy first because, he's obviously important. But let's maybe either on my show or my Doug show or on your show discuss that.
Okay. No, that sounds like a great idea. Yeah, given the dynamics here in Clear Creek. Absolutely. That's a great idea.
Okay.
All right.
I just wanted to bring that up since, you know, you still are politically active, and admirably so, I may add.
Oh, thanks, Marty. I appreciate that. It means a lot. Thanks.
All righty, sir.
All right. You take
care.
You too. All right. Bye now.
He sounds.
Matt?
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Doing all right, sir.
Thank you so much for calling. We really appreciate it. You are live and on the air. We have with us Mike Serbo. He is the chair of the Denver Democrats, as we promised you. He's here kind of in the stead of our state chairwoman for Denver Democrats, who could not be here for a variety of reasons. So, Mike, we really appreciate you showing up today.
All right.
So a little bit about Mike's background. I have known him, not really well, but for several years. He is a past executive director of the AFL-CIO. He was a state representative representing House District 2. That is a House district in Denver. He's done some consulting work in politics in the city of Denver, and now he is the chair of the Denver Dems, a huge job. So, Mike, again, thank you so much for being here. Jerry Fabianic is on with us also. And anything else you want to tell us about yourself before we get going with some questions?
Oh, geez. Wind me up. No, I'm kidding. Amongst other things, I'm probably one of the better youth baseball coaches in Colorado. So as I tiptoe into retirement here, hope to be spending a lot more time on the ball field.
Well, I don't know about that. You're talking to one of the best here. In fact, I coached a 5-year-old T-ball team several years ago. And the first night of practice, I had a card with all of the drills and so on, and I was ready to go and organize, and the first kid stepped up, and after swinging 5 times without hitting anything, he hit the middle of the tee, ball fell off, he picked it up and ran to first base, and I said, I think I'm going to have to throw out my practice plan and go to something a little simpler.
All right. Hey, Mike, this is Jerry Fabianic, and I used to be the chair of the Clear Creek Democrats back in, up till last year ago. And so I empathize with you in terms of your task. So, whatever I did, you're doing it on exponentially, because we're a pretty small county compared to you. So thanks for stepping up, because I know what it's like to be a chair of a party, whether it's Democrats, Republicans, or whatever there. But I want to talk, there's been quite a bit of discussion about the urban-rural divide in Colorado. And I understand the governor in his State of the State address, used the term rural as many times in this address as he did over the last 7 years. So it's really on people's radar. And I just want to talk for a few moments, get your take on it. As a leader of the urban area, I know you're a union organizer. I'm not sure if you had connections, for example, with like Pueblo, which is a strong labor democratic area. But just your reflections and, how strong is it? What can we do? I'm certainly in a more rural area. I'm not rural like in Lamar or something like that, but nonetheless, we're not in the urban area up here in Clear Creek. What can we do to reach out to one another, to understand each other's situations and move forward together?
I don't know if I'd use the word divide between urban and rural. That's pretty divisive. But there definitely are differing interests between the urban and the rural areas of the state. Of course, transportation is big for the whole state, but I think even more so in the rural areas. Water is a big issue throughout the state, but in particular, the rural areas. In the urban areas, we've got gentrification issues, affordable housing issues, not as much as you see in the rural areas, I don't think. I would just say that maybe there's a different emphasis or differing emphases on issues. Education, big around the state, but probably even bigger in the rural areas, trying to get good teachers into rural schools, maintain some of their older schools, find the funds to do it. A lot bigger problem, I think, in the rural areas. So how do we address it? That's what we try to do at the Capitol. When I was in the legislature, I just remember water being a big, big issue in the rural areas where the Democratic contingent at the Capitol worked real hard with some of the rural areas and some of our rural legislators to get a more, I don't know if the word's equitable, apportionment of the water rights around the state, but to address that need, in particular for the rural areas. So I think differing interests are, not interests, but emphasis on differing interests, different emphasis on interests, excuse me, is big, and it was an issue that I was aware of when I was the state in the state legislature, and I think they're still they're trying to increase the bond with rural areas, I guess, as we move forward. I think I'm answering your question. You had a question right at the end there that I didn't get.
Well, in you're getting at it, because one of the ways I would explain to urban area, folks that might, and I used to live out in Aurora, for example, so and I'm very familiar with Denver. I used to teach out in Aurora, and now I'm up in Clear Creek. So, but I would hold my phone up, my cell phone, and say, if you drive to an area of the state where you can't get great reception or you don't have any reception, that's an indicator in your rural Colorado. Healthcare. You have an episode right now on the streets of Denver. Within minutes, you're going to be getting attention. Here up in rural Colorado, you could be 90 minutes away and you're having a heart attack, that sort of thing there. And, so to get the urban areas to understand that, once you go out into the hinterlands, if you will, what we often take for granted, communication, healthcare, et cetera, and you brought up water, for example, is not necessarily the norm. And then the last point I make is that, you know, and there's really only two counties in the state that are truly non-rural. You live in one of them. Can you name the other? I believe it's where the Democrats are going to be meeting in 2 weeks.
Broomfield.
That's it. Yeah. I mean, even large tracts of Arapahoe County, Boulder County, Jeffco, are rural areas. And so when we start looking, and I think, we want to go on to other issues too, but that's something I would like to just bring up and put on the radar for folks, you know, particularly in the urban areas, to say, hey, you know, to really understand what it's like to live in rural Colorado, that it's not a place just to go ski or go hunting or to travel to Kansas through, you know, or something like that, that the needs that are there. And I think it, because, you know, for Democrats to take back the Senate, got some work to do. Okay. And it could be done, but then what could be done? And how could we do that so that those otherwise normal Democratic voters out there, will come back to the fold, you know, if you will. So anyway, just, you know, wanted to touch on that. And so Matt, I'm going to throw it back to you. I know you got some other topics here you would like to cover here with Mike.
Yeah, Mike, one thing, and Jerry and I were talking about this before we went on the air, because as he mentioned to you, he was the chair here in Clear Creek County. And, you know, my question has always been, because I've seen you all in action at these assemblies, both Democrats and Republicans, and what is it that motivates a person to want to be the chair, whether it be in a county or in a state or in the national chair, what is it that motivates you to do that? And what do you do on a day-to-day basis? Give us a typical day in your life on your job.
Yeah. Well, my motivation is, I'm a strong Democrat. I was raised as a labor Democrat. Actually, it was kind of beat into me. Psychologically, not physically. You're a labor Democrat. So it's what I do. I'm hardwired to it. And when the position was open, when it was up for election last year, a few folks talked to me and I ran for it. As far as what a day-to-day is like, it depends on the time of the year. Over the two-year electoral cycle, you have busy times and not so busy times.
Sure.
Of course, the big part of the year is going to be coming up in November, election time, campaign season. But we did just get through a real tough, a real hard section of our agenda as we went through the caucus and assembly process.
Right.
As far as day-to-day work, We're an all-volunteer organization. I do have one part-time staffer in the office here helping out. But other than that, everybody that does the work of the party is volunteer. So, trying to make the trains run on time, trying to make everything fit, get our committee staffed, get people active, giving them things to do, directing, leading. Takes a lot of time, and it's a lot different than in a for-profit organization where, you can just tell people, get this done, and it's done. Instead, with an all-volunteer organization, it's got to be, please get this done.
Do you think that you've been successful in dispelling that old Will Rogers quote that I don't belong to any organized political party, I'm a Democrat? Have you been able to move toward a little better organization, do you think?
We're chipping away at it. I'm not bellyaching. I'm just laying out some of the issues to deal with an all-volunteer organization.
Sure, I've been there.
It's a challenge, and it's fun. It's very satisfying because folks pick up the mantle, so to speak, and get a lot of people want to work, want to be part of a party, want to move the party forward, and all you have to do is ask them. So. Day to day, it's we're all volunteer, we're committee driven, activities, coordinating things like that, all plays in. So,
well, let's get back a little bit to Democratic politics and the General Assembly. You were, again, a representative there. And similar to you, I think this was beaten into me as well. I grew up down in Pueblo. My father was a union organizer at the steel mill there. One of my first political experiences that I can recall was being 5 years old and going to the high school football stadium and seeing John F. Kennedy roll in the motorcade and a convertible standing up waving and the excitement of that and so on. So I certainly understand what you're talking about there. And then, as Jerry mentioned, both of us are retired teachers, of course, a big part of our livelihood now is PERA. We know that PERA is in some trouble, at least that's what is told to us, and of course the General Assembly is a big part of figuring out what's going on there. So, you know, the Teachers Union, which isn't the old blue-collar union organizing necessarily, but nonetheless still considered by most people to be a union, and of course have millions of members nationwide and here in Colorado, several thousand. So what is your take on what's happening there? I know that there is a bill that has been co-sponsored by an equal number of Democrats and Republicans to fix the PERA problem. And can you talk a little bit about that? What's going on and what are the Democratic priorities for PERA?
Well, PERA must remain solvent. I'm not privy to all the inside information. I'm not that close to it down there, so I can't really. I guess I'm a little. I don't quite buy that PERA's in deep trouble. The Democratic Party believes PERA must be solvent and must maintain its promise to public employees. That it's made over the years for their retirement.
Well, let me interrupt a little bit there. You know, I retired with the idea that, boy, 3.5% every year is going to be great, you know, and I calculated 20 to 30 years ahead of time. And then 2 years into my retirement, all of a sudden, you know, once again, PERA's in trouble and they eliminated the 3.5 down to 2% as tied to the consumer price index, which I think 1 year or 2 years we didn't get a raise at all. So I get what you're saying about they may not be in trouble. I'm with you on that, or at least in as deep as trouble as is said. But, you know, the promise has been broken a couple times now. And I understand that, you know, if there is no money, then we aren't going to have anything to argue about at all. So I'm with you that we have to fix it, but promises have been broken already. And again, I apologize for interrupting, I guess, but go on and tell me how we're not going to break any more promises into the future, I guess.
Well, I think that if PERA needs the, if there's a solvency challenge, so to speak, then I think the state should step up, political leaders should bite the bullet, and the state should step in and ensure its solvency. I don't think the budget should be balanced on the back of the workers. It's just a philosophical leaning of mine, I guess.
Sure.
Whenever I have a chance to get out there and get on the dais, so to speak, and speak about PERA, as I'm doing now, is I'm advocating for the state to step up and maintain solvency and not take it out of the workers' hide.
Sure.
As teachers. Former teachers, you know, they're. You didn't get wealthy teaching, but you knew you were going to have a good PERA when you hit retirement age. A lot of people count on that, and we should be delivering on that.
And it's a huge part of our economic engine here in Colorado. You know, millions and millions and millions of dollars generated by PERA. People go out, buy groceries, buy cars, insurance, etc. So thank you for that. Let's move on a little bit. Speaking of the General Assembly, what are some other Democratic priorities, would you say, right now that are happening? And is there a Denver, I believe, has, what, 8 representatives in the General Assembly? Is there a separate set of priorities for them, do you think? Or what's happening with Democratic politics down at the Capitol as we head into the final stage of the session?
Oh, geez. So it's a it's a refresher here. There is something going on outside of the caucus assembly process.
Yeah, I know that's where your mind has been, for sure.
No, power's the big thing down there. I'm sure other stuff will come percolating up as we head into the end of the session. I know there's some issues around affordable housing that are going to be addressed down there. In particular, Denver as a real we have a real
sure.
gentrification problem here in Denver. And folks are looking at statewide solutions. I don't have specifics on any, but I know we're going to be addressing some legislation concerning affordable housing and how to deal with it in the legislature. I've heard the term rent control bandied about, which, you know, it's a big area that you could talk about. I doubt if we're going for full-blown rent control, but issues like that, I think, are going to be percolating up here in the last 2 months to deal with the affordable housing issue.
Okay. Let's take a quick station identification here. This is KGOAT Radio, 102.7 and 103.9, streaming live at clearcreekradio.com. You are listening to The Middle Way. I am Matt Burgles and my co-host, Jerry Fabianic. We are, in case you just joined us, talking to Mike Serbo. He is the chair of the Denver Democratic Party. We've been talking so far about some statewide issues and as they relate to Denver representatives especially. He's told us a little bit about what county chairs do on a day-to-day basis and what motivates him to do that. I'd like to shift gears just a little bit. One more question concerning the state. I was able to see several of your governor's candidates speak a couple weeks ago at Denver South High School. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about that, and then we're going to move on into some national politics and, of course, talk about the so-called Trump effect. And then our main topic here, Mike, as you know, this is the Middle Way. We like to talk about some centrist possibilities, and we're going to talk about if there is such a thing as centrist possibilities and so on. But your governor's candidates, I believe there are five, is that right now, Democrats running for governor?
Well, four.
Okay.
Four.
Yeah.
Nick
Kutcher.
Noel Ginsburg dropped out last week.
Okay, so. I didn't know that. So there are four now. Okay.
Four, yes. Yeah.
And Kerry Kennedy, I understand, won the straw poll at the Denver County Assembly. Is that correct?
It was the preference poll.
Preference poll, okay.
Yes.
So she also won pretty overwhelmingly in the caucuses. And I'm wondering, and I know you have to be careful here because you need to be kind of unbiased, as they're all good Democrats. But what do you think the draw of Kerry Kennedy is, and why is she doing so well up to this point?
Oh, I don't know what the main draw is. Use that term, draw, but she's running a very good, effective campaign, and but I can't take any of that away from any of the other candidates either. You know, we got a long way to go here.
Sure.
So I'm sure Kerry Kennedy's not taking things for granted here, and she's gearing up for the rest of the campaign as well as the other three candidates. So yeah.
So Mike Johnston, very well spoken, has a good resume. He's been finishing third for the most part. And, of course, Jared Polis. Conventional wisdom says that eventually his money, his organization, and his experience in Congress might catch up and overtake everyone. Of course, the downside to him might be when he gets in a general race, if he should, against a Republican. He, of course, is from the Boulder area. He is openly gay, raises a son with his partner, and so on. So I'm sure a lot of Democrats, even though they don't have a problem with that, they are a little leery politically about him. But it's a very interesting dynamic from my perspective with those three leaders. And then, of course, you've got the fourth person who's kind of bringing up the rear. But I think that all three of those at least the three so far vote getters are all capable people. And it's been fascinating to me, again, to see Kerry Kennedy kind of rise to the top to this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I would like to, I'm going to just loop back a little bit, Mike, to that the urban or rural thing here is that what do you feel, believe, sense that, you know, even if one of the top three wins the nomination, which more than likely will happen, either Kerry, Jared, or Mike, they're all urban Democrats. Okay. You know, the to win statewide, you know, then all the votes are put into a you know, the big mass, and whoever comes out with the most, okay, gets it, or plurality, as opposed to like the different districts for the legislature, in which you can have a very strong, you know, heavily blue race in which the Democrat naturally is going to win. Same for the Republican, and then you have the purple districts. That's not true across the state. But nonetheless, for the Democratic candidate to win statewide, has to garner rural support. So, you know, given what I had said earlier about, you know, internet access, health care, and all these other needs in the rural area, what do you think the message should be then? How would you, if you were an advisor to the nominee, what would you say to him or her to say, okay, how do I go out there and win some votes in La Junta to Sterling and Rifle and all those other places, and you know, that, you know, might have some empathy or leaning towards Democrat. How do we get them? How do you get them to vote for the Democratic nominee?
Well, first of all, my advice to the nominee would be understand there's rural issues. Educate yourself if you don't know them already and understand them and get down there into those rural towns and listen to people. Don't just talk to them, lecture them, whatever. Promising the world, that doesn't, you know, it's not what people pick up on that right away.
Very good advice.
Go down and listen to them.
I got to tell you, I'm sitting here trying to think as a Republican political consultant, and I'm licking my chops, depending on who my candidate might be, of going up against either of those three. Again, not because they're bad people or not qualified, just simply because, as Jerry kind of pointed out, they are the urban, you know, Denver slash Boulder typical Democrat that is so easy to target out in rural areas. And of course, especially also in El Paso County, where, you know, we know that that vote's in our hip pocket anyway. So I think that's a very good point. They need to listen, they need to educate themselves, and they need to come off not as, you know, I'm here from Denver or Boulder and I'm here to tell you how it's going to be. Because I think that, you know, I've lived in the rural areas as Jerry has, and the first thing that they can sniff is the arrogance and the, you know, I'm better than you and I'm here to tell you what's going on. And so I think that they need to be very careful about that, but that's just my opinion. So let's move on a little bit to the national look. If you were listening to us before you came on the air, we talked a little bit about Trump, and you know, we said Ronald Reagan was the Teflon president, but this guy seems to be totally bulletproof. I've written him off so many times before and said there's no way he can survive this. And now he's not only survived, but his poll numbers are ticking up slightly, but nonetheless up above 40% for the first time in many months. So what is your take on this? You know, some people say there's a blue wave or a blue tsunami coming in November, and that could open the door for impeachment proceedings, etc. But kind of past thinking that way. What's your take on this from a so-called Democratic insider, I guess?
Oh, I think, you know, the Democrats have a lot of work to do. But there's opportunity here to take back a lot of ground this November in the House and in the Senate. Bottom line is Trump's not delivering on his promises. A lot of rhetoric, a lot of talk. But no delivery, and the vote at that House seat in Southwest Pennsylvania,
right, that's
a few weeks ago, that was a big wake-up call for everybody that you know, people are onto him, so to speak. Now, there's more involved than just Trump. I mean, you know, Democrats have to put forward a good, solid agenda on jobs, on health care, on the environment and move that and show the show and work on an agenda and deliver it.
I was just going to head into the Connor Lamb thing. He ran a brilliant campaign, I thought, won in an area or a district, I should say, that Trump won by 20 points. Most of us who follow politics know the story there. Back to the stereotyping of Republican stereotyping Democratic candidates. I said that, you know, if I was a Republican consultant, the governor's race looks real good to do that to me. Nancy Pelosi, she is a lightning rod for conservatives all across the country. Connor Lamb, very early on, was able to dispel some of those ads put up against him saying that he was going to be a stool pigeon for Nancy Pelosi. He came right out early and said, you know, I don't support her. I think that we need new leadership. I would, putting myself in the position of a Democratic consultant now, I would tend to agree with him. Do you think that people across the country, and of course it depends on the dynamics of their district, but people in swing districts, maybe past Republican districts like Connor Lamb's, that are now somewhat vulnerable, do you think they should follow his lead? Do you think it's time for Nancy Pelosi and maybe her ilk, I might say, to step back a little bit and let some new blood, so to speak, in to the leadership positions in Congress, should the Democrats take it over?
You know, every district's different, of course, so you got to address the issues that constituents are interested in that district, and some focus on the National Democratic Party and Washington and the leadership there. I think there's a lot of fine leaders working their way up through this party. And, you know, maybe Nancy Pelosi should consider mentoring and grooming new leadership. Maybe it is time for a change there. In that regard, but like I said, I don't think it's a. I think it depends on the district, and if I'm running, that wouldn't be my top priority. Replacing Nancy Pelosi, I'd be looking at the issues that my district wants and needs, and I'd be focusing in on that.
Okay, and Mike, I grew up near where Connor Lamb won, and I was just east, northeast of that, and east of Pittsburgh area. I left there over 40 years ago, but I still have family there and old friends. And I know that culture very well. And one of the things that about rural Democrats that they owned that is a lightning rod for many urban Democrats, they're called guns. And primarily because they're hunters. That's really what it's about there. So, and many of them are able to distinguish between the weapons of mass murder that I call them, okay, that the kids on the streets were protesting, you know, and trying to protect schools. But, you know, the hunting rifle, okay, the difference there. But nonetheless, Connor Lamb was a hunter, is a hunter. He's a former Marine. You know, he also was pro-life. He's anti-choice. And yet a strong Democrat, a labor Democrat. And that seems to cause a problem for a lot of, you know, very strong progressive liberal types that are almost becoming, to me, my concern. While I could agree with them on a woman's right, you know, to reproductive freedom. And as a gay man, certainly about same-sex marriage and everything too. But to also understand not everybody holds those values, but where can we find common ground? It seems to me is on the economic issues. Going back to the Bill Clinton thing there, it's the economy, stupid, you know. And if we focus on that, and I think that's what Connor Lamb really was emphasizing there. And that's why it was interesting to watch both he and the Republican when Trump announced the tariffs. They both said, we agree with him. Well, Connor Lamb did because he truly did believe in protecting what was left of the steel industry around the Pittsburgh area. The other guy, Saccone, did it because, well, he needed the Trump voters, and he certainly wasn't going to take on Trump at that point. You know, he needed everything he could do. Okay, and the people saw through his duplicity there. But, you know, I guess the larger point is, and I go back to the urban, rural, but also the other cultural issues that come in, because not all Democrats all believe the same way. And I'm afraid that sometimes in the urban areas, we get into a mindset that, because most people in the urban areas are going to believe in a woman's right to reproductive freedom, are going to believe in gun control, are going to believe in same-sex marriage. But as soon as you leave that and you head out into Kiowa County and you run into a Democrat and they go, well, not quite. And yet, how do we get everybody in United unto, or how do you do that, you know, as party leaders, you know, to then get elected, you know, to elect a Kerry Kennedy, to elect a Jared Polis? I think, you know, to me, that's the challenge out there that the Democratic Party, one of the major ones, and the other is, what is the message itself there? So, you know, my pontification here somewhat, Mike, but just to get your reflection there, you're in that place where I was, and on a grander scale than what I was, too, just in sheer numbers. And you're in that position as an urban leader of the political party, and yet here you are talking to a former rural area leader. How do we start to mesh all this together and be successful in November and thereon?
Broke up a little bit on me there, Jerry, but I'll try to answer it.
He gave you a lot to think about
there. Yeah, go for it, Mike. Yeah, and we only got about 9 minutes left here, so I don't mean to rush you or anything, but no, just reflect.
One final topic, so yeah, maybe yeah. 2 or 3 minutes.
Go for it.
First of all, I'm a Big Tent guy. I think our party's a Big Tent party. We've got some really strong candidates, strong political leaders who maybe are not totally in tune with our platform 100%. Maybe they're off by a point or two. And, you know, I believe you just work through that. But you definitely don't ostracize someone because they're not 100% with the party platform. You try to educate. You try to find room for that person to grow, should I say, on that issue, but you keep working with them as part of your caucus, because the main thing when you get to Washington is the speaker's chair, and having that speaker's chair depends on how many Democrats you have. And if you self-destruct in a district or two because of one issue, whether it be guns, whether it be woman's right to choose, you're just making it harder and harder to get that speaker's chair. And that's the way I look at those issues. And you just keep working through them. I'm 100% pro-choice. I'm you know, in favor of people owning guns, of course. But I believe in gun safety. And that's a whole other area that we don't have time to cover right now. But I don't think if someone is against the woman's right to choose, or totally against gun any kind of gun rights, we should just immediately ostracize them, so to speak. So I think I'm answering your question.
Yeah. Yes, and you are.
So, Mike, the heart of our program here, as you know, again, we're called the Middle Way, and the impetus for me to approach Jerry and the station here and get this going is so many of my friends have on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans, have been so fed up. Become so fed up with the system long before the arrival of Donald Trump, I might add. You know, the process in their eyes is basically, let's run for office, tear down our opponent, raise as much money as we can, win, and then go back and start the cycle all over again. What are they really doing for me? What are they really doing for the people? What's this all about? I probably don't need to tell you, but I have some poll numbers in front of me nationwide as of December of last year. Nationwide voters, 25% call themselves Republicans, 26% Democrats, and this is a Gallup poll, by the way. Unaffiliated, 46%. Here in Colorado, again, you're well aware, you have just a few thousand less registered Democrats than Republicans, both of you sitting right at about 1 million. Unaffiliated voters in Colorado, and this is why predominantly were called a purple state, 1,150,000, and the trend seems to be going that way. So, you know, we kind of came up with this crazy idea, and some of the think tanks in Washington, such as No Labels and Third Way and so on, are talking about this as well. We would like to see somehow not just rural and urban Democrats and Republicans maybe come together, but how do we get back to a two-party system, which, of course, is a healthy system for vigorous debate, but to leave some of the acrimony behind, to try to get back to the old days, if there ever was such a day, but I believe there was, back to Lyndon Johnson and previous, to compromise, and compromise wasn't a dirty word, and centrism, and listening to the constituents, and moving on, and get away from this gotcha politics, and the Fox News versus MSNBC idea. Is that just wild-eyed dreaming, or do you think, as, you know, we understand that you're the a leader in the Democratic Party, but is that something that you see happening in the future more and more? Is the Trump presidency kind of the breaking point where people are going to say, hey, this is enough, it's time to get back? What are your observations on all of that?
Yeah, well, two things. The rise of unaffiliated voters, that's a tough one to figure. I've read where most of that is driven by disagreement with the party on a key issue or two, and or frustration with the leaders of the party. I don't see how leaving a party is going to make things any better. I go to bed every night, not every night, but from time to time, you know, just shaking my head, saying, why are you involved in this? Why are you doing it? All is lost. It'll never work. And then I wake up in the morning and say, damn it, you're going back to it, and you're going to continue the fight. I understand the frustration and the disagreement, but I just don't see where becoming an unaffiliated voter is going to make a difference. You just pull yourself away from the system even more that way. And as far as compromise and centrism goes, compromise is always possible. It is, I might say, difficult right now, and in my mind, I know this could be argued, you know, with the Republican Party in the hands of Trump nationally, and if you look at the Republican Party here in Colorado down the legislature, you find that the Tea Party's pretty much in control of it here. When you have organizations like that are in control, it's really tough to compromise and find that middle ground. So I do think it can be done. I know it's got to be done.
Well, you're a little more flexible. I must say we had one of your counterparts in the Republican Party, the head of the state party, Jeff Hayes, on a couple of weeks back, and he pretty much did not bend on that at all. He saw, I don't want to mischaracterize what he said, but Jerry, I don't think he saw much room for compromise, and it was all about his party, and things will continue on as is.
Yeah, and, you know, just my personal opinion is that, and unfortunately, because I'm a big fan of the former Republican Party, not because I agree with their positions or anything, is because it's healthy for, you know, a strong democratic system to have opposing points of view, and you really need to hash it out. But the way it's gone over the last several, you know, well, even the last couple decades, has gone in a real different trajectory, and it is my way the highway, and it's therefore the more pragmatic individuals that are unaffiliated in their registration tend to vote Democratic, but you know, on social issues in particular, it's the economic issues there. But we're almost out of time here, but just a little news flash here. I was shutting down my computer and a little thing popped up that we mentioned Laura Ingraham earlier from Fox News and how she's been back on her heels, you know, with her comments about David Hogg and, you know, his personal resume and getting into school. She's taking the next week off. So she's going on vacation. So there's some power out there with these kids. And I find that, I don't know about you, Mike, I'll give you a last word on that. But I just, what they're doing is so powerful. I am so thrilled in watching the young people here.
Exactly. It's incredible how these groups have sprung up, these kids from that Parkland school, and actually taking a lead on that. I'm amazed by it, and of course I'm very supportive of it, and so is our party. And hopefully the end product of this will be some stronger gun safety laws around this country, which we need.
Mike, thank you so much for your time today. I know you're a busy guy, and taking 45 minutes or so out of your day to talk with us is very much appreciated by both Jerry and I. Mike Serbo, chair of the Denver Democrats, we really, really appreciate your time. It was a great conversation, and hopefully you can come back sometime.
Be glad to Matt. Be glad to Jerry. Nice talking to you folks.
Thanks,
okay.
Matt.
Our next show is 2 weeks from today, April 14th at 2 o'clock, when we plan to have George Marlin, candidate for Clear Creek County Commissioner, with us. I want to ask him, just as I did with Mike, what motivates someone to run for county commissioner? What do county commissioners do? And learn a little bit more about his policies and what he envisions for the county. Until then, we are the Middle Way. Matt Burgles and Jerry Fabianic, KYGT Radio, KGOAT 102.7 and 103.9 FM. We stream live and are archived at clearcreekradio.com. So tune us in until April 14th. So long, and have a very happy Easter tomorrow.